Yes, the board went into closed session to deliberate on the evidence received on the Shell Oil matter. And the board is, we're now coming back into the public session. It's the board's call whether it wishes to reopen the matter for additional public testimony on questions that it may wish to ask the discharges, or whether the board wishes to now deliberate on the matter here and reach a conclusion.
Right. So go ahead quickly.
I think I would rather not reopen the public hearing. Where are the water quality control board? And in looking at this, it's important for us to keep in mind that we have an ongoing discharge. So the priority is to start the work in investigation and remediation. And there are, as our attorney made clear, two separate theories under which other parties could be named. One is, and I'll deal with just the first, is that they are responsible for the discharge. The evidence before us was very clear that Signature Properties had a very broad responsibility that actually began before the Signature at the Estuary LLC was established, that included investigation through construction oversight. And if there was any evidence that indicated that that was responsible for the ongoing discharge, we would be compelled to name them for that reason. The evidence indicates that construction oversight by Signature Properties was responsible for the change in the vapor control, and that that was not approved through the regulatory agencies. But there's no direct link to the actual discharge. So I'll turn to my colleague, Mr. Moore, to talk about the other theory.
We could share the notes.
I think today we received evidence that from commenting parties that Signature at the Estuary LLC and Signature Properties are essentially functioning as the same entity. And the board believes a Signature in response did not provide evidence that these were functioning as separate entities.
So, legal counsel here.
The board may wish to address what evidence it heard that caused it to, that's causing members to believe that the two entities are functioning as one entity.
Board Member Peacock, do you want to respond to that?
I think the answer to that is we didn't hear evidence of any sufficient level that they were operating as separate entities. The issues regarding the payment of invoices between the two entities, there was no evidence of payback or recharge back. The ownership looked extraordinarily congruent, and so we felt that the burden of proof to show independent action and separateness was clearly not met. And beyond that, I don't think we ought to get into more detail.
Okay, thank you. So at this time then, I guess we will be looking at a recommendation from our advisory team. What your thinking is on this to bring this to closure for today.
I'd like to take 5 minutes and try to develop some language for the board. I will bring it at the end of the time. I'll bring it to the
board. I don't know if everyone heard that. We would like to bring a brief statement back in writing for everyone to understand what we are trying to get at here.
So I think at this point it might be appropriate for someone to make a motion and there to be a second so that I can consult with the maker of the motion and the seconder regarding the language. Okay. But hold off on the vote until, of course, we...
So we are trying to...
I take it back. Let me go ahead and develop the language first.
Yeah, because we don't know what we're voting
exactly,
on.
Exactly.
And so we're going to take another stay-in-place few minutes here.
A short one.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't go too long, because we're all kind of running hard here today. It's been a pretty intense morning. What do you think, legal counsel? Okay, so why don't we knock one or out as soon as possible here? So they've been very patient. So thank you for being patient, all of our visitors. We'll see what the cows are eating on the hills.
This is pretty interesting.
Yeah. There's a lot of grass this year.
Thank God. I remember you were concerned in January.
Yeah, Jesus.
So with...
Yeah, oh, my God.
While we'll return to item 5D, item 6 is a status report on the waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing operations in the Tomales Bay watershed, which this waiver was adopted by the board in 2008, and I'd like Carmen Fulis to make a presentation on the progress of implementing this waiver.
Welcome. Nice seeing you, Carmen.
Nice seeing you too, Chair Miller.
I know you like going over to that West Marin. That must be a beautiful visit. You probably know the favorite spots to get a sandwich over there by now.
I miss San Mateo, though.
I know. We miss you.
All right.
Go for it. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Chair Miller. Members of the board?
Yeah, speak into that thing. I don't know. Today we're having
there we go.
Ear problems.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
My name is Carmen Fulis. I'm an environmental scientist with the Planning and TMDL Division. My presentation today will provide an update on the grazing waiver program in the Tomales Bay watershed. The conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing operations in the Tomales Bay watershed was adopted by the board in 2008, so I'm going to give an update on that program. But before my update, I want to introduce my colleagues Rico Duaso and Jim Ponton, who have been working with me in implementing this waiver. Tomales Bay and the watershed are located in the northwest corner of our region. Sorry, here is the bay, and this delineated in black is the entire watershed. They are next to the Point Reyes National Seashore and are approximately 45 miles north of, from Oakland. There are 9 small towns within the watershed, and the primary land use in the watersheds are livestock grazing, dairy farming, parklands, and light density residential. As I said, the grazing waiver was adopted by the board on July of 2008. This waiver implements the Tomales Bay Pathogen TMDL. The goals of the waiver are various, but first and foremost is to improve and protect water quality by controlling and reducing sedimentation in surface waters, trapping bacteria and other disease-causing pathogens, and at the same time promoting sustainable grazing. The waiver applies to parcels that are 50 acres or more in size and require that ranchers develop a ranch water quality plan. Ranch water quality plans are the core of the program. They include a map of the facility, an inventory of resources, and assessment of the conditions of the ranch. It also includes a list of management practices being implemented at the facility and a list of those management practices that need to be implemented at the facility to prevent pollutant discharge and a schedule for implementing these management practices. Ranch plans are not routinely submitted to the water board. They are held at the facility and are made available during inspections or upon staff request. The annual certification and compliance monitoring report provides documentation of ranch inspections and implementation of management practices and effectiveness evaluation. Ranchers must report any water quality problems found during the inspections and the measures taken to correct this problem. These reports are due annually on November 15th. During the development of the grazing waiver and during its implementation, we have used a multifaceted approach to reach and educate members on the requirements of the goals of the waiver. In addition to traditional public meetings, we have participated with local agencies in grazing management workshops that are intended to assist ranchers with understanding the grazing waiver and complying with the requirements. We also sent courtesy notification packets to ranchers that were targeted for coverage, and continue to make ourselves available to ranchers or their representatives for any issues related to the waiver. We also continue to ensure that the local agriculture agencies are aware and informed of all the grant opportunities provided by the state. In response to the board's adoption of the grazing waiver, representatives from these various agencies like Marine, RCD, Farm Bureau, UC Extension got together and formed the Tomales Bay Grazing Land Partnership. Their goal was to assist the Tomales Bay agricultural community in complying with the requirements of the grazing waiver. We are pleased to report that the partnership has been very successful in their outreach to the ranchers and has provided an important bridge for staff to reach the regulated community. Here, this picture shows some members of the partnership during visiting ranches to assess their conditions and to provide technical assistance to those that need it. Since adopting the grazing waiver in 2008, the Water Board has awarded substantial funding to help ranchers implement the grazing waiver. Two grants for a total of $1.425 million have gone to the Marin County RCD, and a 319 grant for $455,000 has gone to the Point Reyes National Seashore, some of the partners, to implement management practices in this area. In addition, using cleanup and abatement funds, two contracts totaling $230,000 have been awarded to Marine RCD for work with landowners in Walker Creek watershed. Especially significant to mention that of this $230,000, $30,000 went to prepare a ranch water quality plan template and an annual certification report template that has been well received by the ranchers and that are being used by the majority of the ranchers. You know, so it was a good investment of $30,000. And also can be used somewhere else, not just in this watershed. Let's talk about grazing waiver compliance. Well, of the identified parcels for to be covered under the grazing waiver, we have achieved 95% compliance. In regards to annual certification report submittal, the first year we had an 85% submittal rate, which declined the next year. But after we did enforcement in the shape of a notice to comply, then it increased to 97%. And to better illustrate the extent of the grazing lands and the grazing waiver in Tomales Bay, 95% of the parcels required to be covered in 95%, representing 90% of the total land, grazing land in Tomales, is under grazing waiver. Those red parcels are those that we have no response from, and we don't know whether there is grazing or not there. I'm going to show a few examples of the types of management practices that the grazing waiver requires farmers to do. I hope it's clear here that here is a fence where the rancher here installed to keep the cattle from going into the lagoon and protecting the lagoon. The cattle just stays here, and there's a crossing around there to go into the other side of the pasture. The rancher here is probably pumping water from a stream or a spring to provide water for cattle uphill so that cattle can stay cool during the summer and without needing to go to the creek to get water. Here's an example of a crossing. This area here, this is a temporary crossing for cattle when they need to go from one pasture to the other, and it still protects the creek vegetation, and here is the fence. So the cattle are just have this area to go through, and there are fences all around. And they get to go quick, and without causing that much damage. I'm going to show a couple of pictures on how management practices are effective. These management practices were not installed were installed before grazing waiver was adopted, but still shows how important this is. This is the first summer the landowner had installed the fence all around here. Here's the creek. It wasn't looking that good. Had no vegetation. The cows were coming here to get some water, but the landowner fenced the area and provided alternate water sources. And here we see the creek right now. here's the fence. The cattle tends to stay here. The water is there. And they don't have to come to the creek, and the creek looks really healthy. This is another view. Here's the creek. This area was like a cattle crossing area, and you see it's all trampled. There's no vegetation. Now, the creek is fenced. This is a temporary crossing area where probably during the dry season, the cows get to go from one pasture to the other. And here's an example of, besides the management practice, also some creek restoration that occurred at the site. The banks were pulled back, revegetated, and it looks really great and is functioning really, really well. These practices were installed in the Chileno Valley, in Chileno Creek, which is drains into Walker Creek. Now, what are the lessons learned from implementing and developing the grazing waiver? It hasn't been completely smooth. We have had some administrative issues that we've learned to deal with or are learning to deal with. We learned that partnerships are essential. The landowners are receptive of our grazing waiver, and as you see by the 95% compliance, they really accepted it. But a big part of that was that the relationships that the partners had rooted with the landowners. And not only those relationships, but the partners were able to provide technical assistance to the landowners and to us, water board staff, to help us come up and explain to us a lot about grazing so that we could reach the landowners. The experience that we have gained has been helpful in different areas. And as an example, we have this summer, probably in September, we expect in September, Rico Duaso will be coming to you with the Napa and Sonoma watersheds grazing waiver, and which is modeled after this waiver. So some of that experience has been used there. We have also been working with staff at Region 1 as they develop their own grazing waiver and their own dairy waiver programs. And we are part of a statewide work group that looks at dairy and grazing issues. We also learned that the use of the conditional waiver was a good regulatory mechanism. The ranchers, you know, instead of using waste discharge requirements or general waste discharge requirements, ranchers felt a little easier about a conditional waiver in that it gave them a lot more ownership of what to do and where to, how to control their resources. It's also important that, and this we learned afterwards, but something that we did was we made it really clear that the grazing waiver was not about putting ranchers out of business, but it was about protecting water quality and implementing sustainable grazing practices. And I think that helped ease the ranchers' fears that we were there to get them out of business. So our next steps, as we will continue with implementation of the grazing waiver. And as I said before, Rico Duaso is expected to bring, for your consideration, the Napa River Sonoma Creek Watershed grazing waiver to you in September. And we're working on the renewal of the conditional dairy waiver. Now, the grazing waivers and dairy waivers, they apply to similar areas, Sonoma Marine for the most part, Napa too. And they all require the implementation of management practices. It's management practices that address nutrients, sediments, and pathogens, which are the pollutants these watersheds are listed for. So hopefully we continue our success with implementation. And if you have any questions for me, my presentation is concluded.
Thank you. That was wonderful. I think we all realize what a beautiful, pristine part of the world that is over there for all of us. And keeping that really is very important for us to remember agriculture as part of helping us keep that open space and keeping brush control and invasive species control. So I think we're off to a good start, and it's good that we're able to support the ranchers in that area with some funding, particularly with fencing and control, because it's a big expense, but it's well worth the investment. So thank you.
Yes, sure.
Is it possible to possible.
Good. So any other comments for Carmen? So thank you for...
Really,
okay,
real
yes.
But I want to point out just the excellent work, pioneering regulatory program that has been achieved here. It's a statewide model. I'm glad you're plugging into other regions and sharing the experiences and the wisdom that you're gaining from the successful implementation. One thing I want to ask is, you know, one of the controversies in Central Valley is there's the fee structure for waivers, you know. I mean, for other fellow board members here, you know, there's a choice. We can charge a fee to try to cover staff costs or waive the fee as well as waive the WDR requirements but have conditions. And so just to clarify, do we have a fee structure with this program?
Well, I'll jump in on that. The fee structure, there is the ability to charge fees. There has not been a fee structure established. We've discussed whether, because there is a significant level of upfront work, as Carmen's described, it would be appropriate to do fees. On the flip side, the amount of that fee really isn't all that large that we feel that probably we would spend as much staff time tracking down who paid the fees and who didn't. And that at the end of the day, we'd probably end up at the same place. So we much rather would get the ranch plans developed, have the implementation on the ground, and have more examples of what you've seen. So that certainly is something that's in the back of our pocket, that should there be a need down the road to push, certainly if we weren't getting ongoing support from the partnership, that might be something we would consider. But at this point, it does not come up to a high level of, or a high priority for us to pursue.
No, and that's good. And I think it's worth talking about because of the success of the program. You know, what are the elements of success? And I know that with this, you know, with our agricultural community, the fee thing can be a lightning rod issue. We've avoided that.
Correct.
That's, I think, wisdom for, you know, moving forward, not only in our regions, but throughout California. And then finally, it's fine, you don't have to get into great detail, but monitoring, you know, will kind of prove some of this benefit. What we see, and in my experience as a monitoring technician, the monitoring is going to fall from what we're looking at there, you know, the and all that. But has there been any monitoring to date, and or what's the plan? You know, when are we going to hear back about the environmental results of this?
Yes. The ranchers are not required to do the monitoring. Is the Tamales Bay, there's a coalition that does. We take part of that. Point Reyes National Seashore. So there is swamp monitoring there. There is three different types of monitoring going on. And we haven't seen results yet. I mean, the grazing waiver is new. But we will have something in 5 years, I think, you know, at the end of the 5 years. However, I think that what we have seen is an increase in the implementation of management practices. You see the hill slopes are greener. Well, this year you see them in the rain, but I think that the ranchers and the community in general, their comments are that there is much more management practices being implemented, and as such, we expect to see improvement in water quality.
No, I just thank you for the effort. I'm very proud. What Good. You all have accomplished in Tamales, and look forward to seeing it in other of our precious areas in the Bay Area. Thank
all right. you. Thank you.
Very good. So back to our item here.
5D.
And I don't know if our advisory team has put together their brief paragraph, and I don't know if you got all our feeling from it earlier on I'd just like to add that I really believe the board, and I think Board Member McGrath has stated it a couple times, and you could help me out about this, that we feel that, are you all right to hear what I'm trying to, that Signature Properties really kind of had their hands into this whole project from day one, from the planning process to the permitting process. And we feel that they were really have been part of the type of material that was going to be used in the construction project. So I want to make sure we understand that they really We feel that they were involved in the whole process. Is that correct, Board Member McGrath?
If I might add it, this is very distinct from hiring a contractor to build something. In this case, the contractor had a very broad oversight of management. They were in place before there was actually a limited liability corporation. They hired the contractors and oversight them that prepared the remediation plan. They implemented the remediation plan as well as the construction plan. And so their responsibilities included the obtaining of the entitlements. So it's one thing to have entitlements and sell a project and a permit to somebody who then implements it. It's quite another when they're involved in the full management of, including the investigation, the entitlements, and the implementation. And there was nothing here, I think, that demonstrated clearly an independent decision-making authority in many of those steps by the limited liability corporation. And that lack of evidence of the independent decision-making, particularly where there may have been deviations from an approved plan, convinced us that absent new and compelling information, they're just too tightly intertwined.
Are we prepared to share?
I'm going to need still a couple more minutes to get those thoughts down, and I think that it would be appropriate to have a motion and a second, then I'll present the language to the makers to the maker of the motion and the second and see if that captures their thoughts.
So I will ask for a motion.
Do you want it phrased, or do you want it just in concert with the language that we have agreed on?
Our theme.
I think...
I move the motion as being written.
I think the motion would be the motion would be to put signature Properties Inc. On the order.
Right. Correct.
And the second would be second, and then I'll present some language, and we'll see if that those findings then would be appropriate.
I move that Signature Properties be put on the order.
I second.
Been moved in second. All in favor?
Let's hold a minute.
Oh, okay. We still don't have the right.
Not sure.
Yeah, let's do the other information.
It sure was easier yesterday planting pumpkins than today.
Just pause here also. You just moved to add signature. You haven't moved to approve the order yet. So keep
correct.
That in mind.
Yeah, you know.
There is a procedural question as to is it appropriate to first move the motion and then amend the motion. So if I would volunteer a substitute motion that then my colleague I would move the staff recommendation right. as a substitute motion. And can we get a second on that?
Second.
And then we amend the motion by Mr. Peacock.
And as a point of order, I'd say that you should specify that was the prosecution team's recommendation.
Right.
So I amend
that
my,
then is being amended.
I amend my motion to make that clear. So we have
withdraw and remove.
A motion.
So do we withdraw and remove our first comments? Motion.
My apologies. I think that's what the proper process.
Okay. And in terms of meeting management, it looks like we need a few more moments to get that wording together. So if it serves the board, we can go ahead with the information item number 7. Which would be a presentation on the bay-friendly landscaping and gardening by Ann Cook.
This is not normal practices for us to jump around like this today, but the situation calls for it. That's it. I'm out of here. I'm done. We're learning to be more flexible in government.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
It should be the same.
So, welcome.
Thank you. Just making sure this comes up. So, do you know how to get it? So that
do you want to do a slide?
Yes, I should.
Great. I'm just going to turn the lights down.
That was
is like starting with Uncle Leo.
As long as you don't read the whole book to us.
Sorry. Maybe that should have been timed. Well, that's why Stephen was a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Good afternoon. My name is Ann Cook, and I'm the Executive Director of the Bay Friendly Landscaping and Gardening Coalition. And I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. And you are in luck with my presentation because I have done this presentation in many formats. I can do it in 10 minutes. I can do it in an hour and a half. So feel free to interrupt me and move me forward or move me more slowly, whichever works best for you. I'm just really happy to have the opportunity to talk to you.
Let's shoot for the 10-minute level.
that's what I figured. So I'm going to speak very quickly, and if you want me to slow down, just raise your hand. So I wanted to thank you again for the opportunity to speak today. I wanted to talk to you about Bay Friendly. We are already working closely with your staff at different times, and you have some of our programs as your best management practices in some of your permits. And we would like to continue to work more closely with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So I would like to just go through our programs a bit with you and get you up to speed on what we're doing. And I need to get myself up to speed, too. Great. Thank you. So I would like to just go through what is Bay Friendly Landscaping and Gardening, the benefits of the system, the coalition, of which I'm the director, and our role in expanding the program throughout the Bay Area, and talk a little bit about our tools and case studies. So the Bay Friendly Landscaping and Gardening program is its whole systems approach to the design, construction, maintenance of the landscape. You know, we all are very familiar with these conventional landscapes. This one's actually in my hometown of Alameda, I'm sorry to say. But we also know that they require excessive irrigation and fertilization and constant maintenance that are very degrading to the environment, and enormous amounts of chemical pest controls and fertilizers to keep them looking like those types of landscapes. So bay-friendly landscaping and gardening was developed as an alternative to conventional landscaping practices. It's a comprehensive, sustainable approach to landscaping. It's created with significant input over 10 years from public, private, and nonprofit stakeholders, and is based on the 7 principles that you see here for landscaping practices and 7 principles and 55 practices. And what's unique about the Bay Friendly program is rather than just being a program to address, for example, water conservation or native plants, we actually have a very holistic program that looks at all the different aspects of landscaping. And so it is very integral to the project that a lot of the components and practices we recommend have multiple impacts across a broad range of environmental goals that cities have. I'm going to just breeze through these really fast. Landscape locally, so this is just respect the environment that you're in, pay close attention to it, know your soils. Even within the San Francisco watershed, there's an enormous range of local environments that our landscapes are in. Landscape for less to the landfill. If you don't plant the right plant in the right location and give it enough space to grow over time, there's constant trips back and forth to the landfill with enormous environmental impacts on air quality. And constant fertilization and watering. It's very important to nurture the soil. The healthier the soil, the less runoff there is. The soils can be used to store water and provide nutrients, and then you don't need so much chemical and other practices that hurt the environment. Conserve water. We all know this one inside out, upside down, living in the Bay Area. Conserve energy. Really consider where plants are planted and if they're the right size to begin with so that we don't constantly mow and blow and shear and take all that to the landfill. Protect water and air quality by reducing the impervious surfaces, minimizing stormwater runoff. I know all this is close and dear to your heart. Use integrated pest management. Really pay attention to the types of trees you're planting to slow down the flow of water into the landscape and into the storm drain. And through all this, you create wildlife habitat so that we don't have to worry so much about importing bees to fertilize our plants and our fruits and our vegetables if we actually have a habitat that actually allows them to thrive here naturally. So there's enormous system benefits in terms of ecosystem services and the other benefits that I would just like to run quickly through. The sort of heart and soul of Bay Friendly is that the natural landscape provides enormous environmental services that are already in place in the Bay Area ecosystem. And if we were just to leave them well enough alone, we'd be, in many cases, in much better shape. And the example for your purposes is really just thinking about how the recharging the groundwater and how that happens naturally. It's when we add all sorts of surfaces and really mess with nature that we create a lot of the problems that, that your board now has to look at trying to solve. So we're a comprehensive program. We're really developed in order to help local agencies meet traditionally siloed environmental goals, including greenhouse gas emissions, conservation of water, stormwater runoff, and overall just create healthier communities. Our programs work alongside, support, and push the envelope of the many federal, state, and local regulations that are in place to deal with air quality and water quality and stormwater runoff. And we're recognized as a BMP in your municipal regional stormwater permit. And for that, we thank you. And I've actually given you a handout that shows a summary of the many places we're referenced in that permit. So one of the things that is great about Bay-friendly landscapes is that they capture economies of scope. And the idea here is that one practice can lead to many environmental improvements that normally, once again, are thought of as siloed environmental goals. So this is Lose Your Lawn. There's many Lose Your Lawn campaigns in the California area right now, but if you lose your lawn the Bay-friendly way, you can really see this economy of scopes that I was referring to. So in a typical project, this is a project in Marin. It's a two-acre sodded area that was sheet mulched over. And what happens in sheet mulching is you actually leave the lawn in place. You don't kill it with chemicals. You put cardboard over it, add layers of compost and mulch. You reroute your irrigation and take it off of spray, put it on to drip irrigation where needed. And actually, you do all this without any chemicals. So you avoid herbicide uses of about 10 pounds per acre. Or the other thing that typically would happen is somebody would not kill it in place, but they would shave it off and take it to the landfill, and that's about 87 tons that would go to the landfill if you didn't sheet mulch in place. So this is something that we're teaching very broadly in the Bay Area right now at both the professional level and the home gardener level of how to lose your lawn in place because of the enormous improvements to air quality and water quality that are involved with these programs. And I just wanted to point out that even on an incremental basis, there's enormous benefits to the lawn replacement in this sense. So here's a much smaller, humble project in a neighborhood. But basically what they've done is they've lost half of their very small lawn, and we still see water savings of 50% and maintenance cost savings of 50%, much less area to worry about whether you need to fertilize it and all. And most of this is just a much more natural landscape. And there's a reduction in stormwater runoff. In this particular block, everyone did this. So there are projects like that where people try to do these projects together to increase the values of their neighborhoods. The Bay Friendly Coalition projects also, the coalition itself captures economies of scale. So the Bay Friendly system was developed for Alameda County by StopWaste.org, and actually Teresa Eade is here from StopWaste, and I think she more than anyone has worked hardest on this over 10 years to develop the programs that the coalition is now happily the recipient of. But because it was a county program, the county wasn't able, StopWaste wasn't able to respond to the enormous interest in this program throughout the Bay Area. So the coalition was formed in 2009 to grow the Bay-friendly programs to a regional scale. And it was really to acknowledge the fact that our watersheds don't acknowledge our lines on a map, nor do the flora, the fauna. Our landscape professionals work across boundaries, as do, and the city and water and other agencies interested in Bay-friendly often work in different entities, or their jurisdictional boundaries are different as well. At this point, after a few short years, we have 22 public agency members in 8 counties. We're pushing for Solano County and want to work with them this year. It isn't that they don't want to work with us. It's just that we haven't had the opportunity yet to go up and talk to them. We have 6 nonprofit members and a number of individual members. We also have spawned some Bay-friendly type programs. River Friendly up in Sacramento area and Russian River Friendly use our guidelines as well. Our supporters and endorsers include a very broad range of local and regional agencies, resource agencies, but also nonprofits and businesses as well. We have very many resources and tools that have been developed through Stop Waste. And kind of the heart of the program is our third-party rating system, which is a lot like LEED certification for building. It's a similar type of third-party rating system for the landscape components of buildings, which often covers far more acreage than the building itself. And so we have a third-party third-party rated system in which we verify completion of bay-friendly landscapes by third-party raters. And those are registered and tracked on our website, and we continue to audit those projects over time. The heart of the landscape standards you can find in the blue book that was given to you. These are bay-friendly landscape guidelines. These are designed with a professional in mind, and we also have a home gardener version of our guidelines. And the scorecard is actually used by the bay-friendly professionals who are the raters to work with their clients and teach them the bay-friendly practices and make sure that there's justification for a project if it gets a if it becomes bay-friendly certified landscape. Our trainings are quite extensive. We have very extensive professional trainings at both the design, both the maintenance level, and also for design professionals. Our maintenance professionals, we evaluate them and we survey them constantly. So far, we have 500 of them in the Bay Area, and they, on average, touch about 65 acres that they maintain. So the spread is quite broad. And we just completed our first ever raider training. We had two raiders who were scurrying around madly raiding projects, and now we have 40 new raiders. They just finished their first training last week, and we're very excited. That allows us to take the program and really scale it up to the regional scale. Despite the fact that most of this started in 2008, we already have 27 completed rated landscapes despite the economy, and we have 30 more in planning or construction. And we think, once again, that the fact that we are launching the Raider Landscape Program region-wide will really pick these numbers up. And the really important thing about the standard that we have in the score sheet is that it allows cities to actually have a program that gives them some teeth and allows third-party raters to come in and rate landscapes for them. I think we all know that, you know, many of the cities have developed all sorts of environmental goals and policies over the past several years, and then their staffs were completely obliterated in the cuts that have been taking place. And so they have policies on their books, but the inability to implement them. So our program helps them do that by providing standards and raters to help rate the projects. Other tools that we have public policies that are drafted and ordinances that we work with cities to adopt, whether they are for their public projects themselves or for public-private partnerships. We also have policies for private landowners that we encourage them to adopt so that they can do bay-friendly in their own maintenance practices. This is just an example of the types of items that are in the bay-friendly model specification, and then it's tailored for each individual project. And these are lengthy. They can be 13, 15, 20 pages long. But the main objectives are to protect soil from compaction, use natural fertilizers, use IPM, hire qualified professionals to maintain the property. It's one thing to rate it, but if it's not maintained over the next 10, 20, 30 years in a bay-friendly way, it really doesn't do you a whole lot of good. And we have online and print publications, case studies. We actually have about 23,000 documents in circulation in the Bay Area right now that are being used to teach bay-friendly. We have a gardening workshop series. It's very extensive for home gardeners. We have a nursery partnership program, which is very exciting. It's in Alameda County right now. We partner and train nursery staff, and they tag plants in their nurseries that are bay-friendly. So when the home gardener comes from a workshop and goes into a nursery, they can actually find the right plants, figure out how to plant them, where to plant them, and they can do that with some very good input. And we're planning to move our gardening workshop actually into the nurseries itself to really facilitate the actual implementation of bay-friendly. We have a conference every other year that sold out last year with 500 people. We have a website and blog. We have a huge tour. 2,000 people went on our tours that we just wrapped up. It's in four different counties, and it was very successful. And many of the gardens are designed and maintained by bay-friendly landscape professionals, so it's a way of showcasing the various aspects of the program, including stops at the nurseries. So our reach has become quite extensive. We're in four counties now, garden tours in three counties, and we continue to expand. I can quickly walk you through in a minute or two a case study if you're interested, or I can move on.
I think we're going to have to conclude.
That's fine. Let me just click through here 1 second then and just talk to you about, see how flexible I can make this? Your role with bay-friendly, which we really appreciate. We gave you the handout that shows where our standards, guidelines, and programs are referenced in the municipal stormwater permit, and we're thrilled with that. And we also hope to work closely with your staff, and I'm giving a presentation to them as well tomorrow, which I'm very excited about, and Diane's been very instrumental in setting that up so that we can continue to work with you. We're looking for all sorts of ways that we can partner with agencies, including endorsing our principles, becoming a member or sponsor, partnering on grants. We're working on one right now with ABAG, with the Bay Trail, that we're very excited about. And consider, I think one of the really interesting ideas that we had was perhaps considering some of our trainings, workshops, and gardens for your supplemental environmental projects. We have a lot of work that we could do, we believe, with your staff on trying to focus some attention on that aspect. And then we are updating our scorecard this summer, and we'll want to work very closely with your staff, particularly in the areas of stormwater improvements and others, to make sure that we have very clear objectives in our scorecard for rating our projects.
Good. Thank
you very much.
May I suggest to you, I don't know, on your outreach for the home gardeners, possibly getting on the speakers program for the spring 2012 San Francisco Garden Show? Have you ever thought about that one?
The which program for the garden show?
Well, they have programs.
Oh, the speakers. Yes.
Have you thought about getting on there?
Garden show that it's now in actually San Mateo County.
It's in the Expo Center in San Mateo,
yes.
But it's still called the San Francisco Garden Show.
Yes, it is, and it's wonderful. And we were actually there tabling. We've tabled there for years, but I would love to get on the speaker series there.
Yeah, you ought to hustle up to get on that speaker.
That's a great idea.
Because I think it'd be a nice presentation, and there's a lot of interest there.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Give that a try, and I think they even pay you to do it.
Well, that would be really nice. As a nonprofit, we're always looking for that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
I'm trying. I get out of here today. I'll go do some farming. Hopefully sustainability, whatever that means, right? So back to we've had a motion, but we need to know what we're voting on, correct?
Yes, and I would like to run up.
For the transcript that we're back on.
Yeah, we're back on item 5D for the 14th time today.
And I would like a couple minutes to go just show the maker of the motion and the seconder.
Okay,
so
there's no more presentations.
Sorry, I ran out of info items.
Where's Ray? Did we get lunch today?
You know, we don't mess with the staff recommendations that much, but when we do.
Look out. And again, it's kind of an unusual situation, all of you, so thank you for your consideration in this. We want to try to do it right for everyone involved. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. As this is Dorothy Dickey, the board's advisory attorney, I've tried to capture what I understood to be the will of the board from the discussion earlier. I propose that the board consider the following language that would be added as 2B. After addition of Shell Oil Company, there would be a new 2B, and the existing 2B and 2C would be renumbered. So that's on pages 1 and 2 of the tentative order. And then on page 3, we would have the same statement under paragraph A3, named dischargers. This new paragraph would be added between the second and third paragraphs. The second paragraph begins signature at the estuary LLC, and the third paragraph says if additional information is submitted. So I would propose to add this paragraph between those two, the same paragraph in both places. So the paragraph would read, Signature Properties, Inc., and I abbreviated it as SPI, is named as a discharger because it was so closely related to Signature at the Estuary LLC that the two entities effectively functioned as one. SPI commenced work with the board in 2002 prior to the LLC's formation or acquisition of the property. Upon formation of the LLC acquired the property and retained SPI as general contractor. SPI's role as general contractor was so extensive that it performed tasks not ordinarily performed by a general contractor. It planned the development and remediation, obtained the permits, made decisions about the construction process, hired contractors, and prepared and implemented the remediation plan. SPI was invoiced for work on the site and paid those invoices. SPI did not demonstrate that the LLC repaid SPI for the invoices paid on its behalf.
Understood by the full board and our recording secretary. Comfortable with hearing that those comments, that motion? You got us? Thank you. Okay, so any further discussion on the motion? Or do we have another motion?
Mr. Chairman, move the question.
Okay, so we have a motion to move or recommendation to move for the vote. So roll call vote, please, Mary.
Mr. Eliyahu?
No.
Mr. McGrath?
Aye.
Mr. Moore?
Aye.
Mr. Peacock?
Aye.
Aye. So ordered 4-1. And that concludes 5D at this time. And thank all of you again for the hard work. And that concludes. I might add the board could stay for a couple more minutes. I have a personal announcement to share with you.
Okay.
So.
Yes, there's no more action items. But,
and there's not another executive session.
Right, so if you just give me a couple more minutes, we'll share with you.
Okay. Sure.
We don't have to send it to you on Twitter.
Please don't.
I'm just a Twitter. I don't Twitter.
Thank you, guys.
I wouldn't get a Twitter message.
Barely do it in the locker room, let alone on Twitter. I told Steve.
Be careful. You don't want to have any wiener mess.
No one wants to see me in my underwear. Trust me.
Even on a windsurfer.
Yeah, it's scary enough in a wetsuit.
Just in a wetsuit, bad enough, right?
I told Steve. I said it's tough enough for us to go around a locker room, let alone put it in public. I mean, Jesus, what the hell's a guy thinking?
I'm telling you.
Oh my God!
I don't think he was thinking. I'm pretty sure of that.
He wasn't thinking. You're right.
Brain activity.
Stupid.
Thank you, guys.
I'm going to steal a copy of her presentation. Ask her tomorrow.
Something upset.
If that's okay, because I like all those photos. If she's okay with it, then I want to be able to.
Yeah.
That's got his baggage, too. So
mic's off. Yeah, cut it, please.
Well, we can rest assured that it was.